Welcome to a very special episode of Nerd Tweener Movie Podcast. I am joined by one of my good friends. You might know him as Year of the Collector on TikTok, Instagram, and pretty much everywhere else. We are going to be talking about Flashpoint. And this is, you know, it's funny because initially I didn't realize that Flashpoint was such a divisive issue. Some people just don't like it. And for me, I look at them go,
well,
then you might not like comic books.
Right.
Because the Flashpoint is arguably one of the greatest connected series in all of comic books. And that's DC, Marvel, indie. It doesn't matter. It's up there. You can make a case that it's not the, but you cannot make a case that it's not one of the.
First of all, thank you for having me here.
It's my pleasure.
Good to see you again, my friend. always a pleasure to see you. I would say Flashpoint, the actual event outside of, Crisis in Infinite Earths, is probably like the biggest event in comic book history, at least in modern age history, right? Because it not only was a great, you know, Flash story, DC story, but it rebooted the entire universe. And that hadn't been done since Crisis on Infinite Earths. So the significance of it, you know, is pretty heavy.
Yeah, no, it definitely, in my opinion, stands the test of time. Because some comics, man, like I went back recently and started rereading all the old, like every Moon Knight appearance. And right. His first appearance, literally, if you go look in the Marvel app, and right before you read this issue, it literally says, hey, by the way, some things in this issue are really bad. They were bad then, but we're not going to delete them. But just know we don't support the words used in it, because there was a lot of derogatory and borderline racist things said in that issue. But like, I went back and started rereading a whole bunch of like the parts of the event that I really loved. And they're still good.
Right.
Like it's not like there are certain stories that are good in the moment. And then when you look at down the road, 20, 30, 40 years, it's just not up to the par anymore. I think Flashpoint, right, it's going to always stand as one of the top, definitely one of the top DC events, if not in all of comics.
I mean, it's like the core story is something that everybody can relate to, right? If you had the power to go back in time and save a loved one, you would do it. Like, I'm not even putting the question out there. You would do it.
Yep.
Even in the end, right? I don't know if we're getting into it right now, but even in the end, Bruce Wayne admits to Barry, is like, hey, listen, I don't blame you. If I had the power to go and save my parents, I would. And trust me, I have tried. Like, and if Batman is not judging you, you know you're onto something.
And it was kind of funny when they brought back, and we'll get more into this a little bit later, when they brought back the universe, because now that's what it technically is, Batman did. He did save his parents.
Right.
I mean, which is, you know, it's just comes full circle. Like he and like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But this, and I think the reason why Flashpoint stands out to me as such a great run is that it showed basically the darkest versions of the characters that we know and love, but for a reason. Like, it's not like the Dark Multiverse where they're just evil. Like, these are, right, are our heroes that just got moved a slightly left or right on the scale of pain, and it turned them dark. You know, and it's not even necessarily evil. It's wanting revenge. And again, like you said, it's one of those universal understood things. The person you love gets killed, you want revenge. I mean, they made 4 John Wick movies about a guy upset about his dog dying. You know what I mean? And so far
they haven't, right, made 4. So far.
Apparently he wants to come back and do a 5. I thought he died, but I. But when it comes to the Flashpoint, it was just so well done on so many different levels. I mean, it Now, in grand scale, it's not as big as certain events like, you know, like Civil War, which has like 125 connected issues. I think this one only has about what, I think it's like 35, 40. Isn't it in that range?
67.
67? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
And the only reason I know is because
you just did the whole thing.
I collect it, right? If you guys never see me or you know follow me on social media, I collect it every single issue, Flashpoint and tie-in, Flashpoint tie-in to the story, and I did a episode per issue, so it's 67 total. That's how I know.
Well, and then that's why we started, because I mean we've been trying to figure out when and how to get you on here for quite some time, and then once you started doing the Flashpoint, I was like, ding, that's it, that's the one. I definitely, I'm glad that you started making those so we could have this chat. Oh, and before we start, neither of us know our answers. Like we did not tell each other what we're gonna answer, so there could be some duplicates. But any shock or anything like that you see is genuine. None of this is scripted. We just have the questions scripted. That's it. All right. So we're talking Flashpoint. Who are your favorite Flashpoint writers and artists?
Okay, so it goes on set, Geoff Johns and Andy Kubert, right? The main title. The story, amazing. How Geoff Johns kind of like showcased as much as he could from that world with all these characters in the background. And Andy Kubert was able to match, I guess, Geoff Johns' vision, right? If you see in the collected editions, they have like the sketches and you know the ideas they have for like Wonder Woman, for Superman, yeah, how they wanted to portray Superman being weak, fragile, and all these notes they exchange as creators. So, you know, top block goes to them too. I'll say the other book that had the art that actually captivated me was Lois Lane and the Resistance, specifically issues 2 and 3. The
Those are my
way
picks.
stop it. No way. No way.
For me, the reason why I picked and I literally have Resistance number 2 as the one. 3 was good too, but 2 for me, it just had the every little bit of 90s nostalgia that I wanted and didn't even know I wanted. And then seeing the Wildcats with my one of my favorite characters of all time, Grifter. I know he gets a lot of hate, but I love Grifter. I think he's such an underutilized character, and they just did such a good job in that one. And that was that for art wise, that was my pick as well. But one thing that really got me, and you touched on a little bit, was the Scott Snyder Project Superman. Anyone who knows me knows I am not a Superman fan. I don't like the character. He's just too overpowered and too, I'm Superman. I'm going to do everything that's right. I'm sorry, you have that much power. It's going to corrupt you. I don't care what anyone says. I've had Superman fans try to make the argument and I laugh in their face because I don't know. You're wrong. But this version, he had so many insecurities. And he still had all of that power, and not to the point where he could literally take on like Darkseid, but he was still able, he used what he had to save the people he cared about. Like for me, one of the big Superman like animated stuff that I like was the Reign of Superman. Where it
Right.
was the evil Superman, and then Clark didn't have his powers, and he still was like, "Yo, give me a gun, give me a suit, let's go." That, or like in Apocalypse War, where he's literally depowered and still
Right.
is willing to go. That's my Superman, the Superman that doesn't have the power and still will risk his life. I don't like the super like. Oh, I can punch through the reality of space and time. Go away. Just go away. I don't
Right.
have any interest in that. But for sure, I definitely, that was my pick. And one that I didn't like, and this is a personal preference, was the Hal Jordan books. I don't like that art style. It's supposed to look realistic, but it didn't. And though, besides King Shark, like King Shark was awesome in that
and
book.
The Hydra Beast and the Hydra Monster.
Yeah, but like the actual like the way they use the shadowing, it just a lot of the pages were disorienting to me, and that's my personal preference. And there's nothing wrong with that story at all. Like and that's another version of these superheroes that don't have power and still are going to fight the battle. That's one thing I think that Flashpoint did so well. I think that's why one of my favorite tie-ins is the Lois Lane and the Resistance, because while, yes, I mean, they had Edrigan and they had some superpowered beings on that team, by the end of it, they literally rallied the entire of Europe. The normal people banded with them to fight the Amazons and the Atlanteans. And like that part, that is one of my, when we're talking about, I'm judging by your reaction, I'm guessing your unsung hero was the people of the Resistance.
I had a few, right, for the unsung heroes, but the story of the Resistance, when Tanya shows up, like on book two, like her introduction, along with the art, just, I was like, who is this character, right? Yeah. And then in the third book, the final one, they give you her origin story. You're like, oh, this is, you know, a typical person that just happened to be in some, you know, science experiment that went astray, and then she got powers, and she decided to, you know, work, fight for her people, and she became a legend before everything in this world just went bananas. And then when she gets the second Britannia suit, and she punches through Artemis, I was like, whoa, hold on. Like, she literally flies and punches through an Amazonian, like Artemis.
Yeah.
And then she fights Wonder Woman, and she literally puts Wonder Woman like on a full Nelson.
Yep.
So Wonder Woman is forced to see the things that the Amazons, specifically, what's her name? Diana's aunt.
Drawing a blank myself, when she like threw her into the prison and like showed her, this is what your people are doing in your name, like and talking about like important moments, it didn't solve the problem, but it shed a light on the problem to Diana.
That's one of my favorite panels, when like it's like black in the background, and on the left you have Britannia, like angry that, you know, forcing Diana to see this, and on the right, Diana's just shocked in awe because she had no idea. She had no idea. Her aunt and, you know, Eddie, some other people that were just working underneath and, you know, behind closed doors, just pushing and making decisions on her name without Diana knowing. Like the prison, for you, those of you who don't know, they had innocent people in prison because they were either men, their land was stolen by the Amazons, or they didn't want to join their side of the fight. So it's like, okay, you're just gonna go to jail.
Yeah, no, and that was one of the moments where I remember reading it, thinking, oh my god, maybe Diana will see the error of her ways and like be like, all right, I'll give in. I'll submit just because I know what could happen. And then when it didn't, and they still went to war, I was legitimately heartbroken. I was like, come on. Like you had it.
So to me, right? And that is explained in the Emperor Aquaman and the Wonder Woman tie-ins, right?
Yep.
Like, who they were, basically, why they went to war, right? How Orm, Aquaman's brother, and Penthesilea, that's the name, Wonder Woman's aunt, Penthesilea, when they saw that Aquaman and Wonder Woman wanted to get married to unite the nations and, you know, come like reveal themselves to the rest of the world, they didn't, they were, they wasn't feeling it. They was like, nah, why will we? We don't need you. Y'all don't need us. But if they want a union, we'll make our own union. And they were behind the scenes, and they ended up assassinating Hippolyta, Queen Hippolyta, Wonder Woman's mom. And then blame started being pointed. Nobody really knew what happened. Everybody started talking to Aquaman's and Wonder Woman's ear, and then shit just escalated from there.
That's really one of the only differences, really, in the comic book and the cartoon adaptation was the start of the war. Pretty much, like, if you can't sit there and read all of these issues, understandable. I wish you would, but if you don't and you still want to enjoy this event, the animated version is so close to the comics. It's like all they really did was adjust how it started and took out some unnecessary things, like for the whole story. That's really all they did, and it was done fantastically. But when you look at the setup to this, and what I really liked also about this storyline is that it showed what Aquaman can really do, because so many people downplay his abilities. He is a monster. Like the fact that people like, oh, all you can do is talk to fish. He's also near indestructible. He's also super fast, super strong, super intelligent. He's been training for a thousand years old, right? Is he old as hell?
He's old.
You know what I mean? He's been training as a warrior his entire life, right? And he's an Atlantean with advanced weaponry and yes. armor.
Yes, that's what I like about Flashpoint. They showcase Atlantean magic, Atlantean technology, right? Yep. Like the thing that they create that causes those tsunamis and those earthquakes is called the geopulse emitter. And basically what they do is they steal this guy that is a king. His name is King Rion. And he has like geo-terraforming powers where like he can like, you know, move the earth and, you know, do earthquakes and stuff like that. Yeah. They kidnap this king and put him in some freaking capsule, and they just use him as a battery for this weaponry to just cause tsunamis whenever they just press a button. Like, that's insane. Yeah. They sunk like half almost of all Europe. Like, the, Germany, half of Great Britain, Paris was underwater, Greece. Yep. Rome, and they show that in the times, like Aquaman actually swimming through Rome, through like all the sunken cities. In the Deathstroke tying, they literally show him navigating and then getting too close to inland because they see the Eiffel Tower
in Paris, right?
Yeah, like one of those landmarks. I was like, oh no, we have sailed too inland. We gotta go. Yeah, and then it's too late. Ocean Master and Aquaman already boarded their ships, and they just get slaughtered, all of them. That's another tie-in I like.
For me, the other tie-in that I really liked, it didn't have anything to do with the real story, which is usually something I don't like. But the reason why I'm okay with it is two reasons. It was the Hold on, I'm losing my mind here. The monster one, the one in
Frankenstein. Creatures of the unknown.
Yes, it's literally Inglorious Bastards, but with Frankenstein, werewolves. I'm in. Like there's nothing else I like in the world. I'm sorry, you're gonna have Frankenstein go after Zichal? What? Let's go. I'm in.
A Frankenstein, a werewolf, a vampire with wings, and an aqua fish lady.
Yeah. And it was written by Jeff Lemire. And you know, Jeff Lemire is unbelievably talented. Like, anything he does, it's just. And the funny thing is, because when I was going back and trying to pick some things that I really liked, the tie-ins, I remember the ones that I liked, but I didn't know who did them. So I just remember going, I like this. And I go, oh, it's Lemire. No wonder I liked it. Like, that makes perfect sense. Like, of course I liked it. And I, you know, of course, when you talk about the best tie-ins, man, you got to talk about Knights of Vengeance.
You know what?
Batman Knights of Vengeance. I mean, just the...
Okay, before you get upset, right? I do love Knights of Vengeance, the story, right? Crazy. I absolutely love the story, everything about it, but I don't like the art.
It just doesn't work for me. I'll give you that. For me, and this is, again, personal preferences, if I see a random version of the Joker, I'm gonna enjoy it. So to have this female Joker that was Bruce Wayne's mom that went crazy and turned into the Joker, I can sit through some iffy art for that story art, to marry. Yeah. So for me, yeah. I and just because I mean, when especially when you look at the Batman, the Beyond, the one that just came out, that it makes that run that much more important to the overall story, in my opinion, because
yes,
you think that obviously the Joker's dead, and in this version, the version that we got recently, Flashpoint Beyond, she ain't dead, and she's causing arguably more mischief than the real Joker does.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Not even close. I do like how. Like the characters that they borrow from like the main continuity in the how they place them like throughout like the world, but the ones they pick in Knight of Vengeance it's I don't know how to say like 10 out of 10, right? Oswald Cobblepot, aka Penguin, is Thomas Wayne's right hand man, right?
Yep.
Selina Kyle, which you don't see her anywhere else. She is Oracle in this world. She's like
paralyzed completely, like
a wheelchair, and supposedly because of, you know, some throwaway lines that she has, you can assume that she was a victim of the Joker, and that's how she ended up there, right? You have who else shows up there? Joe Chill. It's in that story, the murder of Bruce Wayne, and Thomas Wayne is not a doctor anymore. He became like a casino mongrel, which that he uses the casino basically to fund his Batman enterprise and also to keep an eye out on the criminals of Gotham.
And, you know, I think when you look at Batman is usually this stoic, like no nonsense kind of guy. And then you have this version of Batman and who doesn't rely on tech. Doesn't really rely on his fighting skills that much. He relies on his ability to shoot people in the face. that's basically what he is good at. I mean, he's still a very intelligent combatant. He's nowhere near Bruce's level, obviously, but Cyborg says it that without you, there is no resistance because of his tactical mind, which is scary when you think about. His tactical mind was the only thing that could potentially save this universe. And then you got Batman, who's even smarter.
This guy had no proper training. Like, he's not a detective. He's not by the book. He doesn't believe in the law. It's not about justice. It's fully about vengeance. He's older. He's grittier. He's angry.
He's drunker.
He carries two Glocks. he carries two Glocks on him, and he's walking around after drinking a fifth of whiskey. You don't want to see this guy in, like, in the main book, right? He catches that character that's like a sitting, like a, I can't remember her name. She's like a Harley Quinn-esque character.
Oh man,
what's her name?
Top.
Jojo.
Not top.
Jojo.
I think they had. I think it was different in the movie though. But yeah.
Right. He interrogates her and she's like, that's all I know. And he says, well, I have no use for you. And he drops her from a skyscraper. Right. And then Cyborg catches her and is like, yo, like, what's going on over here? And he's like, she slipped.
Nah, you dropped her, man. You dropped her. What you mean?
His cyborg says, "Oh, it seems like a lot of people are sleeping in Gotham."
And, you know, and one thing that I want to point out about the animated version of Cyborg, that's actually Killmonger. I can't think of his name. Michael B. Jordan is the voice of Cyborg in that.
I didn't know that.
Which, you know, you think Cyborg as this big stoic older character in this version, you know, and you got someone as young and pretty as Michael B. Jordan voicing him, and you're like, man, this guy's like all robot, but he sounds great.
I didn't know that. You know, the thing about the like this depiction of Cyborg, and I saw it on the notes from Johns and Andy Kubert. They wanted Cyborg to look more imposing, like bigger, bulkier. Like literally, one of the notes says, "Built like a tank." And the reason for that is that Cyborg is America's hero in this world because there are no heroes in the USA. Like,
right,
the few heroes are people that actually, you know, do good deeds. They're not like out in the public. The only one that is actually out in the public, like you see them on like TV commercials, and it's actually backed and sanctioned by the US government, it's Cyborg. Yeah. Nobody else.
And it definitely is enhanced because of that. Like, and that's the imposing. It's more War Machine, less Iron Man. Like, right.
Yeah,
like,
no, kinda... 100%.
Now, and when it comes to, we're talking about these great characters that we loved, my least favorite isn't actually a character at all. It is the absence of two characters that I don't understand how they didn't work these two characters in. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I may be wrong about one of them. I know one, the other one isn't. Constantine and Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing, I want to say hard no on that.
I know Swamp Thing appeared in one panel when Barry was running back through the time stream, and he said there's three separate times. But are you going to sit there and tell me that Constantine... And they didn't even, like, they could have just did one throwaway line that he died in the floods. You know what I mean? But with someone that powerful.
Well, you don't have Constantine.
Where's Zatanna? I forgot Zatanna.
Satana is in there. Satana is in there in the the Secret Seven book.
Oh, yeah. I forget about those. Yep.
Yeah. She has like the short hair and the Z scar on the face.
Yep.
Yeah, she's in there. So Constantine is not in this world. However, you have like somebody that's, it's like a sit-in, like a sub-in for Constantine, and that's Dr. 13. You have Tracy 13 in the tie-in called The World of Flashpoint, right? Yep. And then you have her father that literally dresses up like Constantine, like the slacks, the white shirt with the tie, and the cream brown trench coat, and he uses dark magic, so you know it's not quite Constantine, but it's like a sub, you know, like,
because like I don't know. he wasn't in Flashpoint, but his inclusion in Apocalypse War for me, I think, might be the best animated superhero movie of all time.
Ooh, I
have to, my caveat is, and I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, I still haven't seen the second in the Spider-Verse movie yet. I want to. It's not that I'm boycotting it or anything. I've been so freaking busy, and I just have not got around to seeing it. And I really want to, and I will, and I'm sure it's fan-freaking-tastic from everything I've heard, but that Apocalypse War, which was set up by Flashpoint, I think is arguably the greatest animated superhero movie of all time.
I don't know. I don't think that movie is even the best animated movie in DC. Like, I could name like a few others that I like more.
Okay,
Superman, but Batman.
So, I'm talking about strictly in terms of quality.
Right.
Not necessarily, because like for me, like, I like the reign of Superman was awesome, but the death of Superman is in that conversation as well, because I literally cried watching that. Like, I
as you
literally,
should, as you should.
I'm sitting there going, like, wait a minute, I don't even like Superman. How'd they do this to me? You know, but when you like the apocalypse, where I'm talking, when you look at the total storytelling that they did, like they with Constantine at the focal point and having him think this whole time that he was a coward, finding out that Zatanna put a spell on him just to make sure that they had a second chance at this, you know,
right.
And like just the full circle, I like it's fully very dynamic characters. Like you go from Superman being this, we're gonna do this now because I said so because I'm Superman, to, all right, I have no powers. Can y'all please help me? I'm gonna try to fix this shit. You know what I mean? And then just full circle, like, and then that's a story for another show. But when it comes to the Flashpoint setting that up, because they use that, Constantine actually goes, "You did all this. The Flashpoint did this." You know what I mean? So like. And then I like how they use that to reset the entire universe for the animated series again.
Yeah, just like so in like the comics.
And I think that's why I go look at that as a little bit higher on my quality scale, because it put a gorgeous little bow on the first animated universe for DC. Into the new one. To be honest, I haven't liked many of the new DC animated stuff they've had out. They've not really impressed me much. But back to the comics with Flashpoint. We talked a little about it earlier. Who is your unsung heroes of the Flashpoint universe?
Well, I got a few ones in it, and they're tricky, right? I like General Lane, Louis Lane's father.
Okay.
Because I don't remember. He, they had this thing called Project Superman, right? And the first subject was Subject Zero, Lieutenant Sinclair. And he became like this monster being that didn't have any control of his powers. And he was like, you know, bloodthirsty. He was like all over the place. And when he escaped the facility, he started killing like all the other subjects and the scientists and all that. And General Lane used the I don't know what it's called, the Phantom Gun or something.
Yeah.
And he took Sinclair to the Phantom Zone, literally sacrificed himself. Just a regular human, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. Like, what would happen in the world if Subject Zero
would have got
like
out.
Ran amok?
Yeah.
Right.
He wouldn't need the Atlantean and Amazonian war. He would just do it himself.
Right? This guy would have destroyed the world because he was like an unhinged combination of a Superman with like God knows what else they were doing to that guy, right? The other one was Trickster. Trickster, right? Right?
Yeah.
And I didn't get it until like I actually read the book a couple of times, right? Because in what is called Central City, the Barry Allen's city.
Central City, yeah.
Right, you have Captain Cole, well, Citizen Cole, like as the hero,
good guy.
Right?
And then, yep.
Right, good guy, right? Big quotes. And then Flash's rogues were like Citizen Cole rogues, right? Trickster, the Weather Wizard, all of those guys.
Yeah.
And they were like getting together to like make a ploy against Citizen Cole, but they were like mocking and belittling the Trickster from the beginning. So once he got like tired of them, he basically sold them out to Citizen Cole so Citizen Cole could take them out one at a time. Like he was like setting them up, texting Citizen Cole where they were. Like even though he was a bad guy, he sold out the other guys. So you had less bad guys in the playing field, right?
Yep.
Maybe not hero, but unsung hero nonetheless. Trying to think who else I had. Freaking, what's his name? Kid Flash. Bart Allen.
Yep.
Right? I didn't know this because until like I finished reading, because the reading order puts Kid Flash books at the very end, and there's a reason for that, right? The Speed Force makes Kid Flash traveled through these all these different timelines and realities to gather as much Speed Force as he can, and then he meets Barry when Barry's running back in time to fix everything, and he passes all of these Speed Force that he had gathered into Barry, so Barry has enough power to travel back in time and fix everything.
Yep.
Right? It's not shown in the main book, but it's in the tie-in. Without Kid Flash, Barry would not have been able to reset the universe.
You know, I am absolutely blown away that you didn't have Booster Gold in there. I literally wrote on my thing, I'm sure Year is going to say Booster Gold, which I agree with.
No, not Booster Gold. The, what's her name? Alexandra something. She's like Parasite in this universe.
Yeah.
Because she makes Doomsday kill itself.
Yeah.
You remember that scene? Like, yep. She's controlling Doomsday with the helmet, and she makes Doomsday grow claws and stab himself and, like, rip his chest open.
That was another one of those great scenes, too, in the book.
Yes. One of my favorite moments. Like, that was crazy.
And I did, you know, that,
if
that's
she wasn't for her, you wouldn't have Doomsday.
Yeah, also out there.
If it wasn't for her, you would have Doomsday as well, just running around over there doing whatever.
So my picks are Lois and the Resistance, for the biggest reason, because, you know, Lois literally was there when Europe got flooded. She watched it happen and then almost immediately jumped into secret agent mode. This is a Pulitzer Prize reporter that literally turns into a secret agent for Cyborg, risking her life. And then you got a lot of the Resistance. Be Grifter, you got Canterbury Cricket, Godiva, Miss Hyde, Penny Black, we talked about earlier, who becomes Britannia, and then Edrigan, which is one of my favorite characters of all time, you know. So, but what they did throughout the entire, like, in the background is what allowed the final stuff to actually work out. Because in my opinion, if the Resistance doesn't show up when they do, the battle is over before Superman can get there to save them. Because what really stopped the war was Superman showing up and beating both of the asses. You know, like, without the Resistance, that wouldn't happen.
Before Superman, exactly, they showed up and they actually cleared a path in the battlefield for Barry and Batman to continue and you know, do what they needed to do. And also, Lois Lane was the one responsible for exposing all the buffoonery New Themyscira was doing to the citizens of Europe, like destroying towns, stealing people, forcing people into the concentration camps. Like, yeah. Lois Lane was the one that exposed that to the world.
And I think, you know, and it always comes back to my personal, like, love of characters that aren't superpowered. Like, I just, there's something to me about people that have, like, Grifter. Dude just is a regular human being that just is really good at shooting people. Like, he was like, all right, I'm going to lead this charge against two of the most powerful societies in the history of time. Like, and because if not them, who?
Right. Yeah. He literally went from one war to another, because he was in, I think they say, in Iraq with his unit, and they got attacked and Britannia saved them. And then from there, when he was in England or London, he saw when the Amazons invaded, and then he immediately was like, okay,
that's it.
Let's get on this. We got to do something about this.
I think someone just called my phone. Like, hold my beer. You know, he's one of my, him and Idrigan are by far two of my favorite characters in all of DC. So they get a little bump there.
I got one more unsung hero for you. Element Woman. Remember, she saved Cyborg,
yep,
Barry, and Batman from all of those security officers when they came outside the Project Superman facility.
Yep.
If it wasn't for her, they would have been locked up, all three of them.
Oh, no. They would have been locked up. They would have been dead. What you mean? What do you mean? They wouldn't have locked them up. You freed Superman. That's it. I don't know. What we got? Give him some computer virus. Go tell him his son died again. they would definitely not let them live, in my opinion. But I mean, now what's crazy now about this whole timeline is that now it's in its own little pocket universe, thanks to the Beyond that we spoke about earlier, which we're gonna have to probably do a whole episode on just that, because there's so much to dive into with that. And it's, I think when you look at, you know, the longevity of these events and how now they're bringing it back in, you know, I never want any universe in comics to really be gone forever. You right, know, right. Like there's always, I don't think in any universe, Marvel, DC, independent, that entire group, that run of characters is bad. You know what I mean? Like yes, you want to reset to keep it fresh and all of that, but there's always room for Elseworlds, and there's always room for alternate realities. It doesn't have to be erased completely. It's just not the main canon anymore, which is fine. And that is why I like that they're bringing it back. I know it's kind of like almost like a slap in the face to the people who are doing all the Batman stuff now, because it's like, hey, we're going to just go ahead and switch this up real quick. I hope you don't mind. But the fact that we can get more of that Batman, I mean, I loved that. I loved Thomas Wayne in Flashpoint. I love Thomas Wayne Batman a million times more in the Beyond event. I haven't caught up the entire series, but for the most part, I know what happens, and he literally turns into Batman. He was a guy that was just shooting people and called himself Batman. He became Batman in that series. Like, putting the universe's needs over his own and what he wanted. And it stopped being selfish and started looking to just better everyone.
Well, what I like is that they started to include characters that were missing from the original Flashpoint series, right? Like, now in Flashpoint Beyond, you have a Two-Face in this world. You have a Robin. You have Swamp Thing. You see Poison Ivy.
Yep.
Superman is back. So the world is still there, and they're employing in bringing back, you know, a bunch of those characters again. I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm not sure what's going to happen now, but it's established now that it's a whole universe, and it got its own problems.
Yeah.
Again, like you were saying, whether a Elseworld or an alternate reality is created and it's not good, it can always be redeemed by the next writer.
Yep.
So
or ruined by the next writer.
Right.
It really just depends. But no, to sum up, the Flashpoint series, arguably one of the greatest of all time. I think we're going to, we might even have to do another episode and get some people on here who don't like Flashpoint so we can try to convince them.